For BBS Radio, this is Lexi Ross with Health Frontiers. Tonight we have a wonderful guest, Dr. Cheryl Selman, who has written Hormone Heresy. And Dr. Selman is probably one of the foremost experts in the nation about hormone replacement therapy and how it affects female bodies. Hello, Cheryl. It's great to have you on the show.
Hi, Lexi. It's great to be with you.
Well, there was so many shocking statistics in your book that I'd like to like for you to share some of those with our listeners. And I also want to give the call-in number. That's 888-268-4313. I was blown away by the statistics, the actual research that you have as to what, how many diseases, how many problems that are caused for women who are on estrogen therapy.
I know. You know, we think of estrogen as a benign hormone and that actually it's, you know, life-saving and beneficial, and in some cases that may be the case. But if estrogen is not used in proper balance, and if for some reason we are prescribed it and it isn't really necessary, it actually can become a very toxic molecule in the body and can cause a range of problems, including depression, anxiety, fluid retention, increased risk of blood clots, strokes, can affect memory, can increase anger and rage, can contribute to ovarian cysts and fibroids. It can lead to thickening of the uterine lining, putting women more at risk of hysterectomies. And, of course, they have some serious problems, which includes increased incidence of diabetes, breast cancer, strokes, and blood clots. And that's kind of for starters.
Well, the thing that was really interesting to me was that HRT is addictive, and that it also causes liver damage. I mean, I had no idea that it was addictive.
Well, it is addictive. You know, the thing we need to understand most of all about the two ingredients of hormone replacement therapy, which includes a synthetic form of progesterone, known as a progestin, and the estrogens, is that both of these ingredients have been listed by the United States government as known human carcinogens. And in fact, the World Health Organization also has a report that comes out every several years. And the last report, which was just in 2005, acknowledged that all steroidal estrogens found in hormone replacement therapy and oral contraceptives are known human carcinogens.
So why does the FDA allow them to be used?
Well, why does the FDA allow a lot of things to be used? You know, if you are basing a healthcare system on prescribed drugs that are patented, then those are the drugs that are going to be used in one form or another. The things that I have researched and investigated and have personally benefited from, and in my work with women, because I consult with women, there are dozens and dozens of safe, natural, effective solutions for any hormonal issue that a woman is experiencing, but the emphasis is natural and non-patentable. So when we talk about our system of healthcare, it's based on drugs that are patented prescription medications. That's what doctors recommend, that's what they're trained in, and that's what the system supports.
Well, has there ever been any kind of movement of women to object to the FDA passing these things? I mean, it seems like...
Well, you know, the only movement I know of happened in the, I think it was in the late 60s when it was discovered that women who were on the oral contraceptive pill and who were denied access to packet inserts, like they were denied the insertion of packet inserts into these products. And as a result, women had no idea what the consequences were from the early pill, which included blood clots, strokes, and death. And there was a group that rallied and went to Congress and screamed and yelled in the gallery, I think were ejected, but actually made their needs known. And it resulted in putting inserts into packages. But since then,
when you say inserts, do you mean some sort of warning?
Absolutely. You know, when that's what I mean. You know, when the first version of the pill came out, there was no literature that had contraindications, warnings of side effects, nothing. Nothing was provided to women. So, and they had to fight. They had to fight to literally be allowed to have that kind of information made available. And the reasoning was, well, you know, it may alarm women. Well, it should alarm women. That was a very dangerous formula, that women were severely overdosed in the very early oral contraceptive pills. And I have to say, they are a little better because contraceptive pills now don't contain the massive amounts of hormones that were used initially, but they still contain high levels of hormones because a woman on the pill is taking the amount of hormones that she would normally get when she is pregnant, which is when we're making some of the highest amounts of hormones, and there are still consequences and health risks from being on the pill.
Well, when I went on the pill, my arms and legs became numb, and I knew that it wasn't a very healthy thing to do, so I never did it. I never stayed on the pill. I made my husband get a vasectomy instead.
Well, there are many women who suffer from a range of side effects. Many women's bodies tell them right off that they don't feel well. They may get bloated, or they may feel they may get headaches and migraines, which is a sign of too much estrogen. They can have massive mood swings. They can have that bloating. You know, there are a range of symptoms, and the fortunate women are those who, you know, who are able to hear what their body is saying because their body is sensitive. When we aren't as sensitive and we think we're basically doing okay, we do not really appreciate to what degree the pill is altering our physiology and, as a result, compromising our long-term health and fertility.
Well, you had a story of a woman named Franca in your book who had so many symptoms, I couldn't even believe it. She was like the walking advertisement against HRT therapy. Do you want to tell our listeners a little bit about her?
Well, actually, she was a friend of mine, and she was put on hormone replacement therapy early. You know, many women who really are still, you know, menstruating, maybe irregularly, are put on HRT, and they're told they had early menopause, or they're told they just need hormones to help balance them out. And you see, the problem with women is that we don't truly have a deficiency in general. As a generalization, our deficiency as we go into menopause, and that includes our perimenopausal years, is not a deficiency of estrogen. It's a deficiency of the other key hormone, progesterone. So when women are put on hormones in the form of HRT, or in some cases the pill, that's the age group of 35 years and older, which, by the way, the pill has much higher levels of these carcinogenic hormones than HRT, it can alter all sorts of facets of our physiology. So people can start getting massive fluid retention. As I said, you can get the headaches, you can get the migraines, and you know, in the case of my friend, it also affected her brain chemistry, and she found that she was just experiencing huge rages, and it was projected onto her husband, who said, why is my wife acting like this? She never was like this, and he copped it, in a sense, and it was such a rage that she was stimulated from the use of these hormones that it actually caused them to separate, and
they
came very close to divorce. Now, that's not the first time, because these hormones, they, you know, when you change, for instance, things like fluid retention in the body, and you can cause the tissues to swell, it actually can affect brain function. So we start to have altered moods, and many women experience rages that they never had before. It also can be due to the fact that these are very toxic drugs, and depending on our health, when we start taking these drugs, our liver can be affected, and a toxic, overtaxed liver from trying to clear out the toxins can also stimulate feelings of anger and rage and frustration.
And doctors don't inform women. This is part of this, you know, the saddest part is, you know, they just tell you, you know, do it. And when anybody asks any questions, I remember when I was married, I was having constant vaginal yeast. And after about my 100th tube of Monistat, I happened to be friendly with my doctor. And I said, Jack, you know, this doesn't make any sense to me. You're giving me these topical tubes of stuff that I'm putting up my vagina, and it always comes back. It's got to be something I'm eating that it's affecting me. He said, oh, don't be ridiculous. You don't know what you're talking about. And then several years later, I happened to attend a lecture by Michio Kushi, and he said, for any of you in the audience that suffer leucorrhea, which is the vaginal discharge, he said, just stop eating dairy products. So I did, and I never had it again.
And I have to tell you that the pill acts on the body like an antibiotic does.
I know it.
So the other point about this is that when women take hormones, they are actually stripping out the good gut flora and allowing an overgrowth of yeast. And that can contribute to candida problems as well.
Well, you know, between the hormone replacement therapy and the amount of hysterectomies that are performed in America, it's almost like it's a conspiracy against women. I mean, the industry, well, you got some figures, something like a $94 billion industry in hormone replacement therapy alone.
Well, you know, that's true. And, you know, I always like to quote Hippocrates, if I can go back about 2,400 years to get a sense of how history has shaped the way women are treated. Now, Hippocrates is the father of modern medicine, very famous name. He's quoted all the time. But there is a quote attributed to Hippocrates that no one really mentions a whole lot. And this is what he says. He asks this rhetorical question, what is woman? And his response is disease. So we need to appreciate that we have 2,400 years of history that has supported the belief system that women's bodies are innately flawed and the source of her suffering. And therefore, for thousands of years, women have had parts of their bodies removed. They have had their ovaries and their clitoris and their uterus. I mean, there was a time in Victorian era when Freud had some theories about women, too, and in some cases, this sounds really bizarre, but he felt that women would do well hormonally and their mental state would do well if they, you know, removed their tongues.
What?
So I have to say, you know, when you look at history, we have a long, long history of being perceived as innately flawed and then having these various bizarre and, you know, cruel procedures done on us for the sake of, you know, protecting us from our own bodies.
It's amazing, isn't it, that we've allowed that to happen for so many years.
It is. You know, one of my favorite stories, I could just tell you real quickly.
Sure.
The father of modern gynecology, he is acknowledged as the father of modern gynecology, was actually a very incompetent medical doctor that lived about the 1840s. And he was very ambitious, so he wasn't going to let his incompetence get in the way of his ambition. So he was determined to find the solution to a big problem that was happening in the South, and it was the problem of fistulas, which were actually tears in the vaginal lining, mostly due to poor diet, and especially for the slaves, which, of course,
or rape.
Disadvantage, right?
Or rape.
Right. So this is what he did. He took five black women slaves into his, you know, black back blocks in, I think it was Alabama, and he experimented on them without any anesthetic. And after the 30-second procedure on one of his black slaves, he perfected the technique. And the thing about him is that there is a statue in his honor to this day in Central Park in New York City, across from where he had established the first women's hospital, and in fact did become very renowned for his work.
What was his name?
James Marion Sims.
Huh.
He is the father of modern gynecology. That should tell us something right there.
Wow.
Isn't that interesting? So,
interesting.
So we have a long history of, you know, of being perceived that, you know, that our bodies really are deficient. And especially our female physiology is what really compromises our ability to be healthy. And, You know, we have hysterectomies. You know, one of the most shocking statistics that I came across, and this was by a gynecologist himself, who stated that up to 95% of hysterectomies are not medically imperative, which means we have safe, effective ways to address the problems for which women are quite nonchalantly being sent off to have a hysterectomy.
Well, we're being castrated.
Well, actually, that is one of the things that happens with hysterectomies. You know, women go in, a hysterectomy is the removal of your uterus. Generally, it's number one reason is fibroids. Number two reason could be things like endometriosis. The very bottom on the list is actually uterine cancer. That's the lowest statistic. And often when a woman goes in, whether she volunteers it or not, the doctor will encourage her to remove totally healthy ovaries. Totally healthy ovaries. And the reason is that, well, while we've got you in here, we will remove your ovaries because it will reduce the risk of ovarian cancer. And I always say to my audience, and if there's men there, I say, who would like a sure thing to prevent a testicular cancer? Let's just, you know, remove your testes, perfectly healthy, but you'll never have to worry about it, you know. And these men cringe. They think I'm nuts, right? But women will elect to allow this to happen to them, to remove perfectly healthy ovaries, which the term is castration, the removal of ovaries. And really, a woman is never quite the same after that. And by the way, the risk of ovarian cancer is extremely small, just about 4%. And not only that, even if you remove the ovaries, you still have ovarian tissue present that can become cancerous, as some women have told me.
Well, now, let me ask you this, because I experienced a partial hysterectomy when I was 37 years old. And when I look back on it now, I was so naive. If I had known today what I knew then, I certainly wouldn't have permitted that. But they told me I had endometriosis. Now, what causes endometriosis, and why do they think that that is the only cure for endometriosis?
Well, because the medical profession doesn't have a cure for endometriosis other than the use of powerful drugs like hormones that suppress and, again, shut the system off, or the removal of the uterus, where generally endometriosis shows up. But endometriosis, which is endometriosis is uterine tissue that somehow has been able to separate from the uterus and then migrate outside of the uterus and go into the pelvic cavity and can be attached to other organs and cause scar tissue, but it can migrate throughout the body. I've talked to women who've sneezed and some of these implants have come out of their nose. This tissue has migrated right up into the sinus cavity.
I have to ask the question, maybe it was all those tubes of Monistat that gave me the endometriosis.
Well, it's an inflammatory condition. Now, what they have found is that, you know, by the way, endometriosis never existed in the early 1900s. And now we have up to as many as 10 million women in the United States, they estimate, that could have endometriosis. So from something that never existed to now, it's epidemic. What's changed? And what they have found in these women is that they have high levels of DDE, which is a metabolite of DDT. So it's associated, and dioxins. So it's associated with this increased incidence of exposure to estrogen-like chemicals that can be stimulating the reproductive systems in abnormal ways. So I think it's toxicity. And then it's further expanded through the use of, poor diet, sugar, alcohol. As you said, the dairy products can be really bad. And perhaps the use of the antibiotics having a history. So the immune system is compromised, but it's very much an inflammatory condition. And these uterine tissues respond monthly to the surge of hormones, and they get inflamed because these little pieces of tissue actually will bleed. And there's nowhere for the blood to go, so it gets trapped, and it causes a lot of pain and inflammation. But women have been able to heal endometriosis naturally.
And how is that done?
Well, by addressing all the things we were just talking about, by making changes in diet, cleaning up your diet, cleaning up the stress factors in your life, and then working with proper nutrition that helps to balance the hormones and natural anti-inflammatories, and making sure you're getting adequate minerals and essential fatty acids and a range of nutrients that actually have a profound effect on correcting the imbalance.
Now, does the use of progesterone cream help that as well?
Well, generally, progesterone cream really does help with a lot of these conditions. It's not a magic bullet by any means, because we have to understand that getting our hormones back in balance is balancing our entire body, physically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually. But what is primarily driving the hormonal imbalances that we are seeing in women of all ages, starting from quite young all the way up, is this imbalance of an excess of estrogen in relationship to progesterone. Normally, they should be dance partners, and they should balance each other, and estrogen has this tendency to proliferate cell growth, which is quite appropriate when in balance. It thickens our lining every month, so we are ready for an implantation of an egg if conception is going to happen. It helps young women to, you know, put on their curviness and mature their reproductive system. But if it's not balanced with progesterone, which acts like a brake to estrogen, then estrogen tends to proliferate out of control, and that's why 70% of women with breast cancer have estrogen receptor positive breast cancer. That's fueled by too much estrogen.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
You have here a quote in your book that women who use estrogen for 7 years or longer are 14 times more likely to develop cancer.
Well, when a woman has breast cancer or hormone-dependent cancers, which could be uterine cancer, it could be ovarian cancer, it's even been associated with lung cancer and even skin cancers, the first thing the doctor will do is ask, are you on hormones? And if you are on hormones, you will immediately be taken off of hormones. You know, why? Well, we know that the synthetic hormones, as listed again by the United States government and the World Health Organization, have acknowledged that these hormones, HRT and oral contraceptives, or they're made up of the same hormones, are known human carcinogens. So they, if they're not the direct cause, they are a contributing factor, and we want to eliminate any further things that are going to exacerbate this problem. Isn't that shocking? I mean, it's also shocking that we are now you know, really enthusiastic about the use of the pill, and that's a whole story in itself, and enthusiastic in the sense that we are now allowing the pill to be used on girls as young as 13 for acne, which is definitely a condition that is brought about by nutritional deficiencies, you know, stress, bad diet, antibiotics can certainly be turned around. But we're also in a trend to encourage women to basically, I call it, obliterate their menstrual cycles. There are ads on television right now.
Oh, I was just going to mention that.
Right? You don't need a period anymore.
I know it.
And why? What's the reason behind that? Well, because menstrual cycles are kind of untested. They're, you know, we don't know if it's normal for women to be having as many menstrual cycles now compared to our, primal ancestors. And it's inconvenient and it's messy and you don't need it. And
that
so,
the first time I saw that commercial that stops women's cycle for months on end, I just absolutely came apart.
You can imagine how I felt. You know, I've written about this. I call it the medicalizing of menstruation. Menstruation has been made into a disease. We go back to good Hippocrates, don't we? You know, natural cycles. I mean, menstruation is vital for a woman's physical health and well-being, and her psychological and spiritual health and well-being. And if we obliterate and chemically castrate a woman by the use of these drugs, which is the term for the use of the pill, we are doing great damage to her physical self and her psychic self.
Well, I'd like to share something that I learned several years ago. I happened to interview a woman who does Ayurvedic medicine outside of Asheville. And, you know, during my monthly cycle, and I was always right with the moon, so I'm assuming that that is the natural cycle for all women on the planet. I think that's been part of our history. She told me that there is even days where, you know, certain times of the month where I simply did not want to have sex with my husband. And it wasn't just during period times. There were other parts of the month. And she explained to me that according to the Vedas, that there are certain rest times that the woman's body needs to go through where they're not being disturbed by having sex. And our culture is so sex-oriented that it never occurs to men that women deserve to have a break from having sex every day, because most men want to have sex every day.
You know, well, our physiology is very different, isn't it? I mean, men are, I guess maybe it's part of the survival of the species that men are ready at a moment's notice.
That's right.
But women have a different modus operandi. You know, we're more selective. We our cycles alter, our hormonal cycles alter, and there are times when we do feel sexier than other times. And as we, you know, tune into our cycle, there are times when we really want to retreat and tune into ourselves and be quiet. And that is very appropriate, in fact, very necessary, because, you know, the first part of our cycle from day 1 to day 13, called the follicular phase, is when estrogen is very high. And that is a time when we're more outgoing. We are more externalized. And then from day 14 to that day 28 is what we call the luteal phase, after we ovulate. And the dominant hormone there is progesterone. And it's 1,500 times higher in our luteal phase than in our follicular phase. And that hormone is puts us into a very different state, and we are more receptive, we are quieter, we want to rest, we're more in tune with our inner rhythms and more of our intuition. And that is when we should be, you know, quiet, and we should be withdrawing a bit. And, you know, we live in a male-dominated culture, which keeps us running 24 hours a day, go, 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 and we have lost the connection with these rhythms.
Absolutely.
And, you know, this was a major transformation in my life when I first began, you know, going through my own hormonal challenges in my mid-40s, which led me to investigate this issue and ultimately write Hormone Heresy. But I made big changes, and one of those changes was to start listening to my body as it went through these various hormonal changes each month, and I became more receptive and quieter and more withdrawn. It was a total transformation in my life. For the first time, as I attuned to these rhythms, it may sound a little crazy, but I found my sense of self and power as a woman. So I have come to appreciate that teaching ourselves, and then teaching our daughters and granddaughters the power that is found within menstruation, which is what all traditional cultures have known, is the key to helping women reconnect with their true power as a woman.
Well, now, aren't there some ancient myths about menstrual blood and the power of menstrual blood?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I've spent time with Aboriginal women in Australia and Hawaiian women and Native American women, and all of these cultures actually use menstrual blood as part of their rituals and initiations. I know a friend of mine had a daughter who was marrying a Native American man, and my girlfriend, the mother-in-law, actually was asked to give her menstrual blood to be part of that ritual.
Is that right?
Ceremony, you know, which she found kind of strange. But even Aboriginal women would carry in their amulets around their neck some dried menstrual blood. It's always been a symbol of power, because where else can you bleed and never die?
Well, that's true. I've never thought about that before.
You know, it's a wound that you can have that will, the bleeding each month, nowhere else. And certainly in our physiological functions are you able to bleed and not have it be a serious wound. But for us as women, bleeding is part of a purification process. It actually allows us to detoxify, and toxins are released when we bleed each month. So it helps to purify us.
Well, you made a comment in your book about the Inquisition, and, you know, knowing that, especially among the Christians, you know, the power of Jesus' blood, and, you know, I'm wondering if that played a role, the fact of the menstrual blood, whether it played a role in the Inquisition and how women were so, you know, violated, killed, devalued during the Inquisition. I mean, we were literally practically annihilated if you had any kind of intuitive insights or whatever. And that was such an interesting part of your book. I'd love for you to comment on that.
Well, the Inquisition, we don't really know much about it, but it actually spanned a period of time of about 300 years, and they estimate as many as 9 million women were killed. It was a genocide time for women. And what was really happening at that time was that there was a major power shift. And up until that time, women owned property. They were the healers. They were highly respected as keepers of wisdom and played a major role in societies. And what happened around that time was that there was this political and religious shift, and the power was wrenched away from the females, and it was the government and the church that wanted to have this control, the patriarchal usurpation of women's power. And so women became a massive threat to the powers that be, because they, you know, they tended people, they were respected, they had wisdom, and the church and the government wanted that control. And so women were the focus of this 300-year-long campaign to take away women's power. And it was a time of great suffering because women were tortured. Why? Just because they were women. And then when you're threatened with that amount of force, other names were given up just because women were tortured into naming somebody. And so, you know, whole communities of women were destroyed. It was a terrible, terrible time. And most of us have very little awareness of what really happened during that time. And it was the time, as a result of that 300-year-long oppression of women and the genocide of women, that women became very afraid of their power and their wisdom and hid it.
Absolutely. You know, it struck me as very funny the other day. I have a female dog that I mated. And, of course, ordinarily, the dog, the male dog, gets a stud fee. And I thought to myself, it actually was after reading your book, I thought to myself, you know, the woman goes through the birthing. This poor, you know, the bitch goes through the birthing process of carrying the baby, delivering the baby, feeding and nurturing the babies. We need to change the rules. The fee has to come. They should call it a bitch fee instead of a stud fee.
That's right. Maybe you can start a new trend.
Right. That's one of my new campaigns.
That's great. Yeah. Well, you know, I do see that we carry the vestiges of this perception that women are, you know, weaker sex, that we are flawed, that we have to really hide our power. And the system, you know, systematically castrates us as women and making us wrong and feeling bad. And then, you know, taking advantage of us and putting these campaigns out that tells us our menstrual cycles are bad, unnecessary, and, you know, selling us these powerful carcinogenic drugs for no good purpose other than profit.
Well, and now it's the whole thing as women as sex objects, and it's gotten so out of hand. You know, poor women now are going and putting Botox in their faces, which is a deadly poison, and building up their lips so they can be desirable. And, you know, she's an Egyptian woman. I don't know if you're familiar with her, Anwar al-Sadawi.
No.
She was very instrumental in having the clitorectomies taken out of Egypt. And she said, do you think that you American women don't have your veils? She said, look at the makeup that you have to wear, your uncomfortable high heels. You have to, you know, prop up your boobs with bras. And she said, it's not any different than the veils of the women of the Middle East. She says, it's just, you know, it's the same principle, just manifested differently.
Well, yes, we, you know, we do perceive ourselves as basically having little worth unless we, you know, have this perception of beauty. But, you know, even though we know, for instance, that breast implants are extremely dangerous, and I just interviewed a woman who's campaigning against breast implants because they're so toxic and creates a variety of illnesses, they're on the increase. And, you know, we just do things to our bodies that are really very detrimental.
It's unbelievable.
For, you know, for the sake of beauty or trends or, you know, there was something I read in the paper today out of the UK that the average woman in the UK will spend £36,000, which is about $72,000 a year, plus 2.5 years of her life making her hair look good.
Isn't that amazing?
You know, so yes, we still are caught in the patriarchal system that is telling us we have to look attractive to men to have any worth.
I want to get back to some of the things that women can do to naturally to help their bodies if they're, you know, for instance, when women go through menopause, we tend to get very thick around the middle. What can women do about that other than diet and exercise? I mean, there's got to be, does the progesterone cream help with the, or is that just a natural process and is there nothing that we can do about that? Because that's a concern. I mean, even Shirley MacLaine, I heard her on television interviewed a while back and she said something to the fact that, you know, here she was a dancer her whole life and now she's in her 60s and she's stuck with this waist and she said, I can't get rid of it and it's driving me crazy.
Well, to understand what happens to menopausal women, we have to have a little bit of physiology. So, first of all, over the age of 35, our digestion starts to get weaker. And the present diet that we eat and stress really contributes to compromised digestion. So you're not digesting, you're not assimilating, you're not being able to utilize nutrients. So you become nutrient deficient. The second thing that happens to us, we are a adrenaline-driven society. We're always running around, we're under stress, and that seriously compromises our adrenal glands. Now, women have not been told that in menopause, our primary source of hormones actually comes from our adrenal glands. And for us to have balanced hormones, we must have balanced, nourished adrenal glands, because if we're under severe stress, making a lot of the stress hormones, it actually will lead to an estrogen excess and a progesterone deficiency. Now, estrogen excess proliferates cell growth. We talked about that, which means it makes cells grow. It makes us fat. In fact, the more overweight we become, the more fat cells we have and the more estrogen we are producing. And so we have this vicious cycle. And high levels of estrogen will interfere with the uptake of thyroid hormones. And most of our thickness around our waist and that tendency to hold on to weight has to do with exhausted adrenal glands, which also contribute to a poorly functioning thyroid, which governs our metabolism and our ability to generate energy and use weight or store weight. So we have to go back, and this is kind of a simple way of looking at things, but this is what I try to educate women. I'll say this. All hormonal imbalance is a symptom of poor health. If we are not consciously working with strengthening our digestive system, with nourishing and balancing our adrenal glands, with eating a proper diet so we're not putting an over amount of sugar, which will increase estrogen levels and suppress thyroid, detoxify our body, which is very toxic to the thyroid as well. I mean, we're going to be suffering consequences. So it takes concerted effort to get responsible about our bodies and start looking after our bodies and going to people who specialize in getting us healthy and keeping us healthy, which, by the way, is not a traditional medical doctor.
No, it isn't.
Right? You know,
some of the greatest healing I've had has come from chiropractors and naturopaths.
Yeah.
And Chinese doctors, I might add.
Oh, and I talk about them in Hormone Heresy. They're absolutely essential because, you know, these forms of healing are designed to support us in maintaining health. You see, the traditional medical model is really good at suppressing symptoms with either pharmaceutical drugs or some sort of intervention, some sort of surgery. but they don't really have the training to get our bodies healthy. And symptoms are always trying to get our attention that something is out of balance. It's like the little red light in your car blinking, hello. It doesn't want suppression of a symptom, which drives it deeper into the body. What the body really wants is health to rebalance. And in our toxic, stressed out, nutrient deficient world, it's a challenge.
It really is. I mean, what are some of the things that you can suggest, for instance, for adrenal exhaustion or thyroid? I've tried myself a number of things for thyroid. I understand Synthroid is very bad for the body, and that's something you might get from a doctor. I've never found a good thyroid alternative in the herbal family.
Right. Well, again, you know, there are many causes of thyroid imbalances. Sometimes may appear to have either normal thyroid hormone readings when you get your blood test, or maybe they're abnormal, but the problem may not be the production of thyroid hormones by your thyroid. The problems could be elsewhere. So, again, things are never as simple as what we'd like them to be. Well, in the book I write a lot about the benefit of natural progesterone, which is an over-the-counter cream. It's a bioidentical hormone, which means it is the similar molecular match as to the progesterone our body makes. And so many of us are out of balance with progesterone. We're deficient in progesterone, and as a result, the estrogen is way overboard. And progesterone plays a role in helping to create healthy thyroid levels and reducing the symptoms of night sweats and hot flashes and anxiety attacks. It was profound for me when I first used progesterone cream, because I was getting really severe anxiety attacks about 3 a.m. in the morning, and night sweats as well. And when I started using progesterone cream, they just magically disappeared. So that got my attention and began this journey. So that's something that women can safely use initially while they're starting to learn about their bodies and get their bodies better. But adrenals need two things. They need to have high input of vitamin C, which was the most concentration of vitamin C is in our adrenal glands. So we need to be taking adequate amounts of vitamin C, which could be as much as 2,000 milligrams four times a day. And the other important ingredient is a form of a B vitamin called B5, and you really want that in a B complex.
Uh-huh.
And you need to, B's are really important. They help us with stress, and they help with the liver, and you really want to be taking 50 to 100 milligrams of a good B vitamin. There are many things I can talk about that help, that support the endocrine system in general, and one of those things is a Peruvian herb. It's actually a cruciferous vegetable. It's like a turnip, and it is the most prized food for the Indians high up in the Andes, where really good nutrition is scarce. And it's a food that's been used for thousands of years. They cook it and make it into a powder, and it's called maca, M-A-C-A. And maca is considered, ma is the root for mother. It's considered this amazing female food, because it is a food. It's rich in vitamins and minerals and proteins. And the Indians use it for menstrual problems, for infertility, for menopausal problems, and men use it for virility and vitality, and so do women, actually. It nourishes the entire endocrine system, which includes our thyroid and our adrenals and our ovaries, for energy, balances the hormones. Many women have found that their endometriosis and their fibroids have disappeared. They increase their energy. Their libido has increased. It's helped with PMS, with the hot flashes. It's pretty amazing.
Now, is this something you can get in any health food store?
You can. You can get it in any health food store.
Okay.
You know, classic herbs are things like black cohosh, by the way, and Vitex. These are classic herbs that help with hormonal balance.
You know, we haven't talked about, and we're almost running out of time, but I really want you to talk about the bioidentical hormones that are now being foisted upon women by doctors. And, you know, I've had a big question mark about those, and I wanted you to, tell me what you think of those.
Remember when I mentioned earlier that the United States government has listed all steroidal estrogens as known human carcinogens?
Yes.
Well, that is all steroidal estrogens, whether they're bioidentical form or the prescription form. If we don't truly require estrogen at the lowest possible dose, then that imbalance can wreak havoc on our body. So the first thing I tell women is never, never, ever take estrogen of any sort until you get an accurate assessment of your hormones, and that will never be available through blood serum testing. And I explain why in Hormone Heresy. A blood serum test is a very flawed test to actually get an assessment of the tissue levels of your hormones. You must use a saliva test, which actually shows you the accurate levels of the hormones circulating in your tissues. So the blood test leads to a false reading and a false diagnosis, and often lots of trouble because you get prescribed the wrong thing. So you first must get accurate assessment of your hormones, and that comes only from a saliva test. If you're going to, you look for a test, it's got to be a saliva test, which doctors, traditional medical doctors, don't do. Alternative medical doctors do, naturopathic doctors do, some chiropractors do, some acupuncturists may do, but not traditional medical doctors. So that's, you know, that's really important, because that is going to give us a baseline of what's really going on. I once did a saliva test simultaneously with a blood serum test. And I have to tell you, Lexi, I got two totally, totally opposite readings.
I believe it.
You know, so HRT is, you know, it's not about replacing our hormones. We want to get our bodies healthy. If our bodies were healthy, we would transition through these stages of life symptom free. And you know, many women say, well, you know, is something wrong? I don't have any hot flashes. And we forget that is what is normal. We shouldn't have these symptoms. There are cultures around the world that don't have symptoms of discomfort. And that is an important message for us. We need to get ourselves healthy. And if we have discomfort at menopause, at perimenopause, at PMS, something is out of balance. We're toxic, we're nutritionally deficient, we're stressed. Something needs attention.
Well, we haven't even talked about all the hormones that are put into meat and eggs and dairy that are affecting not only women's estrogens, but are feeding men estrogens that they don't need. I mean, that's a really important, factor in this whole estrogen toxicity.
Absolutely. You know, we are very much what we call an estrogen-dominant society, an estrogen-dominant world. And that is partially caused from the 100,000 chemicals that we're exposed to on a daily basis that have the tendency to mimic estrogen. Many of these chemicals are hormone disruptors. Some mimic estrogen, some block thyroid, some block testosterone, some block progesterone. I mean, there are a variety of effects that are affecting our hormonal systems as a result of the degree that we have become so toxic in these hormone-disrupting chemicals that we breathe, we eat. You know, all commercial beef, for instance, are shot up with a cocktail of hormones. Which
80 different chemicals is what I've researched.
Yes, and it's in the meat, and we eat them. And that they, you know, these animals, you know, pee them out, poop them out. It goes into the water system. We have found, you know, this is another article that I wrote, what's coming out of our tap waters. And we know there are studies that have shown that there are appreciable levels of these estrogens from HRT and oral contraceptives in our drinking water.
Is that right?
Including a range of pharmaceuticals that has shown that Prozac, there was a recent study that showed in the UK they found levels of Prozac in drinking water, which, by the way, has an effect on thyroid function. And I have to say, we didn't get into this subject, Lexi, but the use of cell phones and all the EMFs, the mass towers, and all the, you know, explosion of all the electrical appliances, but particularly what's happening with the cell phone world, has a very, very debilitating effect on our endocrine system, suppressing many functions and increasing the risk of breast cancer or hormonal imbalance and a range of things. So we have things going on in our 21st century life that we never had even a generation ago.
Oh no, and it seems like it's accelerating all the time.
It is accelerating because these technologies, we're very enamored and in a sense we're very addicted to things like our cell phones and our wireless world, and our children are now exposed to this. We have estimated in a couple of years that 40% of 8 to 12 year olds will have their own cell phones. We are participating in a massive experiment. HRT was a massive experiment, and it was discovered it was a major medical mistake. I believe the indiscriminate use of the pill is another major medical mistake. We know that the earlier a girl is exposed to the pill, the greater her risk will be of developing breast cancer. We now have 20 and 30-year-olds being diagnosed with breast cancer. And The Lancet said that, you know, early exposure to the pill increases the risk of breast cancer in young women by as much as 60%.
And, you know, it's like we're in a chemical stew right now. There's no doubt about it. I mean, between the electromagnetic pollution and all the toxins that are in our food, I'm surprised anybody's alive anymore.
Well,
everybody is exposed to everything. I'm serious. The human body is amazing that it can endure such devastating toxicity. It's amazing to me.
Well, it is amazing. The body has this capacity to function in spite of these, various insults. But, it's getting worse. And as a result, you know, part of my journey and my work is to support women in waking up to what's going on, because we actually carry that real concern for the survival of our species. It's just the nature of the feminine to be nurturing and to look after life. And we really must wake up, and we need to make the changes. And the more we can make changes in our diet, start eliminating things that are putting toxins into our bodies, you know, green products, organic foods, and using more natural products as opposed to pharmaceuticals, the more we actually make an impact in our body.
I did want you to mention foods with phytoestrogens. The ones that we can commonly find in the store that are good for us.
Well, I'll tell you some of the best foods to help with hormones and just to strengthen the body in general. Some of the best foods are, first of all, you should be eating cruciferous vegetables every day. Broccoli, cauliflower, cabbage, Brussels sprouts, radishes. These are all in the cruciferous family. Now, cruciferous vegetables have a number of chemicals and ingredients that are inherent within them that help as weaker estrogens. They help to the liver to detoxify it from these chemicals and from these hormone disruptors, and are, you know, anti-cancer. So they're phenomenal. And so we know without a doubt that cruciferous vegetables protect us against cancer. The other really powerful food has to be the flax lignans, flax seeds.
Uh-huh.
Now, they're very cheap, very, very available. You can just take them home and grind them in your coffee grinder. I recommend 2 tablespoons a day. These act as weak estrogens. They also help the liver to detoxify. They will neutralize the toxic estrogens in the liver into benign estrogens. They are protective against breast cancer. They help with PMS. They're pretty amazing, and that they're so cheap, and 2 tablespoons a day, put it into your soups or stews or shakes, and you're looked after. There's another 2 other things I would recommend we do on a daily basis. Number one is to drink green tea. Green tea is known to be anti-inflammatory, antioxidant, reducing weight, give us energy. It's a phenomenal drink, and we have found in studies that women who, like in Asian cultures, the more green tea that is taken in, the lower the risk of breast cancer. And the other spice that is awesome is turmeric, which is that yellow spice that
uh-huh.
is found in curries. Now, turmeric is the only thing that has been known to take a cancer cell all the way back to become a healthy cell. And it also is detoxifying to the liver, supports our liver. Detoxifying our liver is crucial. The liver plays a major role in hormonal balance. So we want to support the liver. It's a powerful antioxidant. And green tea and turmeric are synergistic. If you take them together, it makes the turmeric 3 times stronger and the green tea 8 times stronger when they're taken together. So have some turmeric in your food and drink green tea. Those are simple things that are in our diet.
Doctors, do you counsel with women?
I do.
Okay, do you want to give your email address or something if someone would like to contact you?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, I have a website, which is sselman, S-S-E-L-L-M-A-N. And if women go up to that website, they can order my book, Hormone Heresy, and my new book, which is about to come out in about a week or so, called What Women Must Know to Protect Their Daughters from Breast Cancer. And I have a free newsletter that if you just go up to that site, you can subscribe to. And I also do consultations with women. I work with women actually all over the world with, you know, just via the phone. You can have a very successful consultation over the phone. And women can just contact me by going to my email address, just info@sselman.com will get to me.
Fantastic. Well, I want to thank you. You have been very informative. It has been a pleasure to speak with you today. And just want to thank you for being on the show. And perhaps we can do this again sometime. It appears that you have a lot to share.
Well, I would love to be back, and I really thank you for giving me a chance to share this. It's such important information, and you're doing wonderful work, and I look forward to another visit with you.
Well, thank you so much. And this has been Lexi Ross with Health Frontiers on BBS Radio, wishing you the blessings of natural health.